Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Views podcast for January the 13th, 2023. This is episode number 145. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about several different vehicles appearing at CES, including Fisker Ocean, Volvo EX90, and Polestar 3. And we'll also be talking about Tesla price cuts and a Hyundai Ioniq 5 that can do tank turns. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the impeccable Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EV's and host of the YouTube channel, State of Charge. We also have special guests, Patrick Anderson and Liv Lee from the Mach-E Vlog YouTube channel. Liv is also a contributing writer to the website, A Girl's Guide to Cars. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Welcome, everybody. And welcome back, Pat and Liv. So a lot has happened since you were last on the show. And I believe that you recently moved from Colorado to San Diego. So how's that working out?
It's good. We're excited. We've been here 1 month as of yesterday. We've already contacted multiple solar companies, and we're trying to get solar installed. So they've done the site survey, going through that process. And the other thing we're trying to do is we had to sell our gas-powered car. Great thing, you know, because... Mm-hmm. Got rid of the other gas car. So now we're looking for a second EV here in California, which we've been struggling to find a Bolt.
Good luck with that.
So now we feel
oh God.
Yeah,
it's
Bolt. Kyle, do you want to get a Bolt?
I'm gonna
buy one and you'll buy one. And the two of us will just go get Bolts.
Tom, we'll just have Bolts by lunchtime. Like it's not
if you wanted to buy like $35,000 Bolt, I could get a $35,000. I turned down two Premieres this week, but I just because they're out of my budget.
And sorry guys, this has been a long running thing here on the with Dom and not getting a Bolt.
we just decided like a couple of weeks ago, and then of course, being here, we're like, first of the year, let's go get one. But we're just struggling with the dealer experience, and it's frustrating when they're we want to get a Bolt and do a video about exactly the condition that it's in, and they're like, well, we have to put paint protection, we have to put 3M guards, and we got to fill it with nitrogen. I'm like,
oh, Jack.
And I'm like, we'll even pay for some of that stuff, but just don't do it. And they're like, no, it has to be on there.
It's so strange that some dealerships are like that,
when I got my Lightning, they put on the window etching, the glass etching, and that it was already on it. So I couldn't say no. And then, it's really not a terrible idea, but it was already on when I went to pick up. But yeah, every vehicle we put that on before, we even talked to the customer, so $500 or whatever it was.
Yeah. It's so frustrating.
Yeah. So, Tom, last week we talked about the Top Dom review you're doing, and it aired this past week. But did we talk about everything that we wanted to say about that?
Yeah, I don't think so. I just said that it was coming up, the review. So we'll do a quick overview. It's a 40-amp plug-in unit that you can convert to a hardwired. It's a kind of a newcomer. Top Dom's been an established company. I think they're based in Hong Kong, either Hong Kong or China, and they make a lot of automotive diagnostic tools. So this is kind of right up their alley. They make the, computer things that you plug into your car and it does diagnostic. And they even do lithium ion chargers, like the backup battery chargers and things like that. So they put out a charger, and it was fairly priced. So I thought it would be worth checking out. And it's a decent unit, but it has a lot of shortcomings. It failed my automatic restart test, which is a big one, where I'll have it charging a car, and then I'll turn the circuit breaker off to simulate a power outage. And then I turn the breaker back on, and within a couple of minutes, it should begin charging the vehicle again. And this didn't, and that's really rare. I only had one other unit ever do that. They all automatically restart to the point where I almost said, maybe I should stop doing this test because it just always works. But now it reminded me why I need to do this on every unit. So and it wasn't just the vehicle, because I'm worried, well, maybe just my Lightning for some reason isn't communicating with this well. So then I plugged in my my Rivian R1T. It did the same exact thing, wouldn't restart. Then I did I took my Ford Charge Station Pro, did the same thing with both vehicles right at the same time. They both started charging again. So I go, okay, it's the unit. And then just for fun, my friend pulled up, Pete, who's actually in the chat room right now, with his Tesla. And I said, while you're here, come over here. Plug in, charging the car, shut the circuit breaker off, turn it back on. Again, nothing. Just a red light in the charge port, like some kind of fault. So it will not restart. And that's an important test because, you know, it depends where you live. We get a lot of frequent power outages here. Even if it's just for like a minute overnight, like the power flickers, it's going to shut off. And now you wake up in the next morning and your vehicle's not charged because it didn't start charging again. Now, some cars can send you a notification, I guess, a text message or something. But if you're in a deep sleep, you're not going to wake up if your phone gives you a text, you know, notification. So anyway, it failed that. You know, it's I like the bones of it, but the execution was poor. I think Topdon could do an improvement. The cable right here, I'm doing the cable deep freeze test. I don't know if you could fast forward like 30 seconds or so on this video dump to where I'm actually playing with it. And see, I freeze it down to negative 15 degrees Fahrenheit for 24 hours. Now, then I pull it out and I wrap it in a tight coil, but then I try to unwrap it. It took the crown. It is the worst deep cold weather cable I've ever tested. It was like a spring, like a coil. Watch when I unload it. I can't, I'm using like all my strength to get it to straighten out. That's how bad it was. I mean, this is like a lot of the cables, I'll say, you know, it's not the best if it's really cold out and you're going to mount this thing outside. But you could manage it. This you can't manage. This would be, if you came out of your house in the morning and it was plugged into your car, you would have to just unplug it and throw the thing on the ground. Like you wouldn't be able to walk it back to your thing and your connector holster and coil it back up because it was so stiff. It was like, I mean, I'm like bending it. It was nuts. So yeah. And look, as I bend it, it kind of like stays straight again. You know what I mean?
Right.
it was crazy. But yeah, so it's not a good cold weather cable. But you know, if you live in San Diego or something, that really doesn't matter as much. But we do all these tests just for all different reasons. Did pass the drop test. I dropped it a bunch of times. Even I dropped it a few times off camera just for good measure.
Right.
And it's got a decent connector. I think it was the ITT connector. I forget which brand. But it's got good pieces is what I'm saying. And the unit is a nice compact unit. And it comes with an app, which didn't work. I tried for 3 days to pair the app. It wouldn't work. I finally got someone at Topdon. I couldn't get customer support, never called me back. So then I emailed the company and they gave me a procedure to go through and it worked. I got it to pair, but then it wouldn't give me any data from the car. So, and I just told them, guys, they wanted to send me a new one. I said, look, I've been working with this unit for 3 weeks now. This is it. I'm completing the review. I'll mention in the review that maybe I just got a bad one and the Wi-Fi, you know, didn't connect, but, in any event, it got pretty low score in our my final score. But if they were to fix these problems and bring this back out, which I see a lot, I see some of these companies, particularly the Asian companies, rush to market and get a charger to market, and it's not fully baked. But right. Then the next year, they send me another one, and I look at it. Oh, okay, this connection's better. The plastic is thicker. The cable is better and they have a different connector hole. So I'm like, okay, this is what they should have waited, but they just rush to market and they throw these things out on Amazon because they know if it's a low price, people will buy it. And, you know, a broken record alert here, don't go to Amazon and buy the least expensive charger, period.
Don't do it.
You know, get one that's good quality. And this appears online to be a good one because it has a 3-year warranty. It's safety certified. It's Energy Star rated. Those are the things that when companies do that and put them through Energy Star certification, UL certification, give you a 3-year warranty that you say, okay, you know, looks like they did their work on this. It's probably a quality unit. There's some you go out there, you'll say 90-day warranty. Don't touch that with a 20-foot pole. Even a 1-year warranty, don't buy. Because if the company's not willing to back the product with a decent warranty, it's probably junk. So, and I do point to the fact that it has a lot of good reviews on Amazon, but mm-hmm. Let's face it. We all know you can game Amazon. We all know that these companies pay people to give 5-star reviews on Amazon. So, you know, take the Amazon ratings at, you know, with a grain of salt. No one's paying me to give them a good review. So,
right. So what is your final score? Is a 3.5 out of 5 stars?
Yeah. 3.5 out of 5. And that's, I'll tell you why. So sometimes, 3.95 is the final. My personal score was 3.5. I average it with the charger rater. The charger rater doesn't take into consideration things like that brake. It's just a point-based system that adds all the things up, and then it gives it a score. Then I give it my personal score and average the two. So it is the lowest final rating I've ever given.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Right on. Well, thank you for all that. So you also, this week, put out a video on your State of Charge channel. We explain how long it takes to charge the Audi Q4 e-tron. So you did a charge session with this Audi Q4 e-tron maybe a couple months ago or something.
Yeah, this is one of those that got lost in the weeds. Okay. I made this video and I forgot I made it. I forgot that I'd never posted it is what happened. Oh. I did it in September. And you know, September and October for a lot of the journalists that go on media drives and so forth. No, it's a crazy busy time of the year. Most media drives are between September and November. And I was just on the road constantly. And I made this video and I forgot I made it. Matter of fact, I think, wasn't I with you guys on the Audi Q4 e-drive? Yeah, we hung out on the Q4. That was in September. So I made the video and I forgot about it. And the problem with that is now that I posted it, when in the video I'm talking about how the ID4 maxes out at 135 kilowatt, because during the media drive, Audi was comparing it to ID4 charging. And they gave us the ID4 5 to 80% was 38 minutes. And the Q4 e-tron, they're like, you know, it's got a little bit higher top DC fast charge. It's 38 minutes. So, of course, I incorporated all that into the video. But now the Chattanooga ID4 charges at 170, is it, or 190 kilowatts? So, this is the information they gave us. And that's what I put up there. But unfortunately, it's a little dated right now. That's what happens when you wait 3 months to put out a video. But the bones of the video for the Q4 e-tron are all true and correct. It's just the ID4, some of the versions can charge a little bit faster than what it can when I put in this video.
Right on. And so you also fleshed out the video too, talking about other aspects of charging the Q4, right?
Yeah. You know, I started... I get a lot of comments on that when I do just the DC fast charging videos, and right. People say, Tom, at least explain a little bit about how the car charges other ways too. So I said, okay, from now on, when I do my DC fast charge recordings on a vehicle for the first time, before I get into that, I'm going to say, look, you can charge this level one. You know, it comes with a level one charging cord. It'll take this long. You can charge at level two. At 40 amps, it'll take this long. At 48 amps, it'll take this long. So I go into that before I jump into this DC fast charge recording. And that's based on what people have been asking me on my videos. And I think it's a smart thing. Rather than just do DC fast charge, it only takes a few minutes to talk about level one and level two, you know, to talk about the onboard charger, what how much power it can accept, and the standard equipment that comes with the vehicle. So that's what I started doing.
Right on. So
it did okay. It did 0 to 80% in 38 minutes. Now, it's not a big battery. Should it charge better? Yes. Does it charge like a regular e-tron? No. But it's their entry level vehicle that starts at under 50 grand. And, you know, it's not terrible. It's not a great charging EV, but you can get up to 30% in about a half an hour. And, you know, provided you don't, if you start at zero, like I did, which almost nobody's going to do, most people are going to plug in at 10% or so. Most people freak out when they get under 10%, you know, 10 to 80 is going to be about 30 minutes. And that's not terrible for a road trip.
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
it's okay. Not great, but it's, right. You know, it's passable. It's barely passable. That's like my barely passable, you know, thing, you know, but you got to return X amount of miles in 30 minutes. And this just is kind of like right on that threshold. It's
right.
Audi could have done better.
So putting this aside. So this week you also had you also conducted an interesting poll on Twitter. Let me just throw it up there. you asked what percentage of charging is done at home, and the results were pretty interesting. Were they kind of what you expected?
Yeah, it's what I expected. I figured most I think industry polls, because a lot of these companies run these polls. Most of them say that somewhere around 80% of charging is done at home or work, or 85%, something like that. So,
right.
This is, I could have framed it a little bit better, this question. I just kind of threw it out there. And then when I went back, I was like, I should have maybe framed it a little bit better, talked about maybe home or at work, because that's like daily charging. If you could charge at work, it's almost kind of like you could charge at home, because that means you don't have to go out and find public charging for right. your daily charging. If you can go and plug in at work, you have a place to daily charge. And, I kind of should have, but the poll was up and I said, I'll let it run. Maybe I'll wait a month and do a little revised version and we'll see if the results are different. We got over 4,000 votes, I think. And it came in at like 83% of the people said that they can charge, that they charge at home more than 75% of the time.
Right. That's a lot.
It's what I expected, to be honest with you. Yeah, most people charge at home. That's going to probably evolve now that, electric vehicles adoption is spreading to, early adopters almost all lived in single family homes, so the early EV people almost all were able to charge at home. But now we're getting a lot of people saying, I want that Mach-E, but I live in an apartment, how do I deal with this? And so we're seeing that more and more now. So you're going to start seeing that diversity of where you charge. I mean, early on, 7-8 years ago, I saw polls that it was over 90% of the people that owned EVs charged at home. So right. but that's changing now as networks expand. A lot of people that have Teslas in particular realize they can buy one and not have charging at home. Right. So, the network's more reliable. It was more prevalent. We're getting more CCS infrastructure now. Whether it's reliable enough for you to buy a car on is another question, but the chargers are getting installed, at least they're in the ground and people can see them.
Cool. So if you watched the podcast last week, you'll know that Kyle was planning on checking a number of cars at CES and putting together videos. And I spent the weekend watching them. It was great. And now I've watched most of these, but let's start with one I didn't watch. Kyle, you caught up with Arkady Sosunov, as the founder and CEO of FreeWire, and talk to him. So first, maybe remind us real quick what FreeWire does, and then tell us what you may have learned or what stood out from your talk with him.
Yeah, well, it's FreeWire is a DC fast charging hardware manufacturer, but they put battery packs in their chargers. So they have a 160 kilowatt hour usable battery pack inside of their charger. And basically, it's perfect for areas where it's hard to get power to your site. You guys know we're moving into a new building and we want, of course, to have DC fast charging where we're going to be. And just the process of even thinking about getting, a 500 kVA service to our building is astronomically hard and long and can take, 6, 12, 18, 24 months and tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars just so we can then put in a charger. Right. And so it's pretty insane, sort of what we have to go through to make this happen. FreeWire really allows you to plug into a, regular level 2 source, if you will. It's basically a 20 kilowatt input. You can really go less than that too. You could plug this thing into a NEMA 1450 like that's behind Tom. And it will run. And all it is it's buffering a slow input charge for fast output charges. And they claim about a 10-to-1 ratio. So if they get about a 20 kilowatt in, they can do about 200 kilowatt hours per day without major issues. And I've made some videos with FreeWire before. I actually thought this was the best video we did at CES. We made a lot of content. We hung out with Patrick and Liv. We really had a blast in Vegas. But I thought this was the most interesting to our audience because it exposed Arkady's passion for not just his charger, which he did a lot of the engineering work himself, the CEO, but also the business case for why you would want a battery buffer solution, because the charger is more expensive, right? You're buying the battery pack. Right. And a lot of CPOs just look at the bottom line. but this can help peak shave. So many things that it can do.
Demand charges, right?
Yeah, yep. So you can basically avoid all demand charges with this. And there are downsides, right? If you're in a high throughput area, right, don't put a free wire in. It's not built to handle, you know, 50 cars a day. It's more for, okay, if you are here in the mountains of Colorado and you get a very occasional traffic. I mean, I saw some of the data and pretty much every free wire just sits full charged all the time. You see one charging session and then it goes back to full because they're installed in areas of relatively low throughput.
Pete Glass asked, and I don't know if you know this offhand, but how much of FreeWire does BP own?
I don't know. No idea. But I do know that some BP stations, and I know there's also another huge fuel chain in Western Canada that's installing a bunch of these things.
Okay. Right on. And how many kilowatt hours do you say they hold?
It's 160.
Wow. Okay.
And then you buffer that with your input. They'll have a version in the future that can do 50 kilowatt in. So, right, you know, you'll have a bigger battery pack, 50 kilowatt in. You can actually string multiple chargers with DC buses in the future as well. So if there's a charger that's right at the front of the parking lot and they have another one at the back and everyone's using the front one, rather than letting that battery drain down, they'll take the power from the other charger and send it over to the first one. Nice. So yeah, I mean, it's really awesome. They're going to have vehicle to load vehicle, or I should say charger to load, charger to grid, so that you can actually, you know, for example, if you run a fueling station, which a lot of fueling stations are installing these because it's hard to run high power charging for a lot of them. They can actually power their entire site if power goes off in their town off of this thing for like a day or two.
That's great.
It'll be kind of cool. I really want that to actually happen because how cool would it be to have EV chargers power fueling stations?
Right. Hey, so is this something, is this like a possibility for your place, your new space?
Yeah, we could put in a free wire easily. No question, but it's not what we're thinking about doing at the moment. We need a little bit more high power application for testing.
Right. Right. So what's kind of a prices? Is this got to be a good, what, I don't know, $100,000 at least?
Oh, think triple, more.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Right. It depends on how many you buy. I don't know the exact price, but you know, probably just the battery portion's $100,000. So you know, just a guess.
I guess, right. 160. No, yeah.
No, we're talking big number, but that's not unlike, I mean, most 300 kilowatt chargers, 240 kilowatt chargers are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars before you even put them in the ground. So this is a lot more expensive, but you can, you know, really reduce your operating cost once you have it in.
Right on.
You're trying to make money, you know, selling electricity at a, you know, with a margin of 10 cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah, no, this is a lot
of electricity.
BC fast charging, there's not much of a business case for it at all at the moment.
Unfortunately, you know.
Yeah.
Red Edwards asks, can you plug free wire into the wall outlet? That would be like a 110. I think it'd be kind of slow.
I don't think you can. I think it needs a 240 volt service,
right,
or 208 in.
Right. That would make sense. Yeah. At a minimum. Right. So Kyle, you were the first, if not the first person to actually drive the Fisker Ocean, I believe, this weekend. So I think this was in a big chunk of fenced off parking lot. But you still made a number of observations and stuff. So I thought maybe you looked at a number of cars this weekend, like we said. So I thought maybe we could start with this one. And then so give us maybe your thoughts on the styling, your thoughts on the interior space, actually probably more interesting. And then your driving impressions.
Yeah. So went to go drive the Fisker. And I think we're the only ones to ever drive a pretty much production version, or it's not really a prototype. This one's pretty much representative of a series production model. And that is a Nissan Leaf, not the Fisker Ocean, but there we go.
Here we go. We're getting there.
Yeah.
Why is there a Nissan Leaf in your Fisker video?
Well, it was for an ad integration that we did.
For
a video game thing. Yeah. And the Ocean was really a cool experience. I wish I could drive it on the pavement. So like you can see, we're just in this dirt parking lot, but better to have a small experience than no experience. So the interior, super cool. One thing that really came up in a lot of the comments in the video was this glass roof situation with the solar panels.
Right.
The audience really did not like all the shadows inside the car.
Really?
Yep. And it left some weird lights. And I totally agree. You know, there were so many things I was trying to absorb in real time that I was like, I would kind of just cover that because that was annoying. Or can I just take the solar panels off? Because it just left some weird shadows going on in the car.
Right. Or somehow maybe darken the see where the light strips come through and all that kind of blinds through. Maybe just cover that up somehow. You know,
well, it's like I look out the roof of my Model S, for example, and it's you pretty much can't even see out. It's so tinted. So just put that tint on this with the solar. Right. That'd be cool. But I don't know. I thought that was a pretty much a downside. The interior didn't feel huge. You know, it felt like the dash was really high, but you could sit low in the car, which I like. There wasn't a ton of room. It's not like it's a big car. Interestingly, I thought the ID4 actually felt bigger on the inside than this. And that's just from my quick impression. You know, I have to get them back to back to really, you know, sit in them. But, you know, with the Fisker, it's really supposed to be a design exercise. That's you know, the point of the company are designers. We all know that Magna does final assembly. They do for many vehicles, not just this, by the way. So, you know, everyone's like, oh, Magna and Fisker are doing their things, and we have a great relationship with Magna. But it doesn't, like, they do that for like a ton of cars, so it doesn't really impact our way of reviewing it, in my impression at least, because there were things I didn't like about the Fisker Ocean. I really don't like that they made the decision to keep it a primary axle and the front axle. You know, we're in the age where, you know, this is sort of a sporty SUV, 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds. You know, it's got the power, but it does not have the handling characteristics to match what they're trying to sell as speed. And I actually think they're taking advantage of most users don't know or care. And I'm not sure you should build a car around people's lack of awareness when it comes to driving dynamics. You should build a car that drives great. Like Model Y, for example, 90% of people will never rip a Model Y hard. But when you do, it's like, holy smokes, this thing's super well balanced and really fun and has much more power on the back than the front. And, you know, that's just the way a car should be. So I thought that was annoying. But then there were things that I really liked about it. First of all, that UI was not done, not even close to being done, but the screen rotating, super cool. You know, it just, when you're driving... Sorry, Dom, go ahead.
Sorry, I just went, where is that screen rotating thing?
That's right there, at the go end. To the right a little bit.
Okay.
Keep going.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
Yeah, somewhere around here.
Yeah, and okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's you know, I don't like that they took like all the nerdy energy details out of it. They're like, we put this graph on there. So it's like definitely for beginners, the car, which is okay, I guess.
Sure.
And I was a little bit unimpressed with how far along the software was. It looked really clunky. You can see warning lights all over this one. And they're like, oh, but there's a new version that we could put on. I'm like, this is the car you brought to CES, the world's largest tech show. Make sure it has the new version. Like, what are we doing here? There were so many things like this across the whole show that people just didn't have their displays ready. And I'm like, this is not something you mess around with. So we put everything on camera, of course. And, you know, rear heated seats. The Fisker Ocean is a great car. I'm not sure the performance version is worth the money at 70 grand. I think if you can get the entry level one, that front wheel drive, if you can still get the big wheels, then you have a really stylish, quite premium car. I actually really loved the seats. You know, they're blue, which was cool. I think you can only get the blue seats in the nice one, but overall you get this really stylish car. And, for what, 30 something thousand dollars, 40 grand. Won't get the tax credit because it's built in Austria. There's the screen doing its thing. And then you see the software just sit there for a minute. There we go. Come on, this is CES. So I don't know. I really got the impression that at least the guys that I talked to at Fisker were really focused on the conceptualizing the ideas, but they weren't actually the people engineering the stuff, which is, I always like to talk to directly to the engineers. Really nice guys though. And it was a good first experience, but a lot more to be had. We don't know how it charges. We don't know the efficiency. What we do know is, you know, it's a great looking SUV and they claim a pretty good entry price.
Right. So Hey, Liv and Patrick, did you guys drive the Fisker Ocean?
No. The only one that we really got to drive there was the VinFast, which I know is coming. Right.
Yeah. We'll talk about that coming up. Yeah, for sure. Did you see it in person though?
We've seen it previously. We didn't see it at CES. I don't think they were officially at CES. Maybe Kyle may have some special access. And we found that there's a few companies that aren't officially at CES, but they sort of shadow the conference.
Right. Right. So Kyle, was this part of, I don't know, how did you find them?
No idea. I just walked out to a parking lot. Know some of the Fisker people and they're like, and Hendrik's like, yeah, just go drive it. And I'm like, great, I'm filming it.
Oh, so, Hendrik was there too. I guess you chat with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen companies do that. Like just what, you know, Liv and Patrick talked about, Dom, is that they don't pay to be at CES. Like ahead of time, they like rent a parking lot. And, you know, so they just bring their stuff and set it up out there and they're like, oh yeah, come look at us. We're over here, you know, but they're not in like the book and they're not, you know, CES doesn't talk about them because they didn't want to pay those fees.
Right. Just offhand, Kyle, you said not to get, you don't think the performance version is worth it. How quick is the non-performance version?
I don't know numbers wise, but I drove this in front wheel drive. It has a rear disconnect axle. So I imagine this in eco mode, whatever they call it, earth, would be the same as the normal car because it's just the rear axle disconnected and you're left with your primary axle. Right. And it felt pretty good to me. I mean, like it just spun the tires to the moon. You know, there's still some work to do. Really loved how quiet the motors were, really liked the suspension tuning. I just need to drive it a little bit more. You know, I drove it for 2 minutes in a dirt parking lot and I put all my impressions in that video. So if you're really curious, just watch that video and you'll see everything in there.
Yeah, definitely watch the video. It's a good one. So you also, I was trying to pull up some more stuff here for you. Okay. And yeah,
while Dom pulls that up, 4 years ago at CES, Lightyear did that. And I was there and they weren't at the show, but then somebody inside was like, you know, you can drive check out the Lightyear solar car. It's just, you got to go down past, you know, that restaurant, turn left. And I'm walking through the Vegas streets and it was and all of a sudden, like no people are around. And I'm like, was this a setup? I'm going to get mugged. But then like I cut through like a strip club parking lot and in the back, the Lightyear was just sitting there in the middle of nowhere. And it was like blocks away, you know, like Kyle, this parking lot wasn't even paved. You know, it's like these companies, these fringe companies that can't really afford to be at CES, they take what they could get and it can be blocks away from the main show.
Right. By the way, Lightyear was there this year. And yes. I have to say, they had like the Lightyear 2, but it wasn't like ready. Are we going to go into that?
We'll talk about that. Yeah.
Okay.
I got you, Kido. I got you, man.
Okay.
I got you covered. If I could just get this. So we're missing Martin this week because he got called up to do some other podcast things for the company. So I'm twiddling the knobs and things, trying to get things set up. So things aren't quite as smooth this week as they usually are. So my apologies with that. So Kyle, you also had the chance to go through the Volvo EX90 that just debuted in November and talk to the designer. So can you tell us about the EX90 and did it live up to your expectations in person?
Yes. Wow. Even better in person. Love this thing. And
you're pretty enthusiastic in this video, man. Holy crap.
Because I love Volvos and like, they're just awesome. And like, you know, design wise, it's great. Specs wise, look, we have to drive it, but like feels premium. Finally, we get good electric Volvos. We've only had the XC40, which is their entry level product here. And so now we're like, great. We can get all the good stuff from XC90, which I love the XC90, and it could be now electric in the EX90. So you get the big sound system, you get the good wool seats, you get all the driver assistance that you could ask for. How it's all going to work and mesh together when we drive it, I don't know yet. But I do know that our audience was really interested in this car. A lot of people commented that they have them on reservation. And I think it's the most thorough tour yet of the EX90.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's got the cool windshield wiper fluid thing, but it's got like the built-in funnel. That was kind of nice.
Such a genius idea. We've been building cars for 100-something years, and we're just coming up with that funnel.
Right. And it's funny because you did another, the Polestar, and we'll get to that in a second, but it doesn't really have the same thing. No. It's like, what?
Yeah, what the heck? Every car needs the funnel.
Yeah, I'm all about the funnel. So it lived up to your expectations. I'm trying to find the cool light situation.
So the lights open up and then the headlights are behind there. But yeah, lived up to all my expectations. I didn't get to sit in the second or third row. It's spacious, but these were like really early cars. And so, yeah, little still buggy things with them. But overall, I mean, we know, you know, Volvo is going to put this thing on sale, not this year, I think next year. So we're still a little bit of ways away from it. But I thought it was video because, I think it's pretty production representative from a design and space standpoint. They probably still have to work out some of their tech and tuning and how they're going to optimize the software. But overall, pretty close to being done, actually, and nice work to the Volvo team.
And lots of space in the back there with the third row down for dogs or whatever.
Yep, huge space in the rear, rear air vents. Honestly, the electric premium SUV segment is so saturated with just heavy-hitting, awesome products. iX is incredible. Tesla Model X is so cool. Audi e-tron, Q8 e-tron, probably arguably the worst one on paper, maybe the nicest one to drive. EX90, R1S. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Right.
How are you supposed to choose which one? I don't even know which one I would choose. I'm like, I want all of these.
Model X Plaid.
Yeah, Model X Plaid rocks, dude. But you also give up some things going with Tesla over some others. But then you also gain the ability to actually go on a trip comfortably, which might be your only choice if you want a road trip and have a smooth experience, especially as EV adoption picks up. And we're not seeing an increase in charging infrastructure.
Right. So you also got to drive the Polestar 3, which is built on the same platform as the EQS or EQS.
Yep. They're built on Volvo Spa EX90. 2. Yep.
Spa 2, right? I'm glad I didn't write that down. In my head, for some reason, I was thinking CMA, but that's the
baby one.
That's the baby. The Polestar 2 is on that, right?
Yep.
Right. So are we sharing that? No, we're not. Okay. trying to catch up with what I'm saying.
But I'll give you the quick hit because we're already 30 minutes into this thing. Polestar 3, super cool five-seater version of the EX90, a little bit spicier. You have performance EX90 drivetrain as the base Polestar 3 drivetrain. You can then option this all the way up to the Polestar 3 with performance pack. That's what you're looking at here. Big brakes, different suspension tuning, torque vectoring rear diff. One of the best interiors of any car I've ever been in. Just an amazing, interior combination, especially from a color, trim, material standpoint. A little bit disappointing. They're still using real leather in the Polestar 3, really? Which I thought was like, okay.
Really? It's everywhere, like, just the
seats themselves say like, sustainably sourced leather. And like, maybe it is, I don't know. But I just... forget the environmental impacts. I don't like leather in cars because they wear really quickly. And, a lot of these new materials are proving to hold up much better over time. And you can see this show car already has ripples in the seats. You can see it's got, discoloration on the side bolsters from everyone getting in and out of it. And so I was a little bit like, I'd still get this interior because it looks incredible. But I just wish it was made out of a different material. You can see it's cracking and like it just doesn't look good. So that's a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, that's not really acceptable I guess Polestar is a newish brand, but still, even they have lots of experience with this kind of thing through the Volvo, history, and they know that's not really acceptable. Dye transfer and wrinkles in your show car.
It's animal welfare Napa leather.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so I actually
treat them well before we kill them.
Right, sure. But I did a deep dive on this recently. We have a whole hour-long video on interiors and seating. And we talked a lot about like where the leather's coming from. And we're not killing cows to put them in the cars. They're going for different reasons. But I still just prefer a non-leather interior myself. I like an animal-free interior. I just don't know why anyone decided that that's the material we should be sitting on.
Right. That is a good point. It is kind of weird.
There's so many new great materials that look better, feel better, and hold up better over time.
Right. All right. So now let's talk about something else. Both you and Patrick and Liv all drove the VinFast VF8, and we'll ask them about their experience shortly. But and I also drove this a year ago when it was still under development, and back then it was not great, not ready for prime, not even ready to be tested really. So I watched Kyle's video, and it's certainly much better than it was last year. But Kyle, you still found it had some shortcomings. So in your video, you go through the vehicle inside out. You get a drive along. You get a test drive. So give it to us straight, Kyle. Like how much did you hate it?
We're at what, January 7th, when I made that video, somewhere around there, and we've already reached the worst new car of 2023. Takes effort.
Right. That's so you weren't super impressed.
No, how could you be? The thing's 62 grand, the one we drove.
Right, right.
It's got 179 mile EPA range. They're like, oh, but Kyle, the new update, we're going to rerun the test. It's going to give it another 20 miles. Get the heck out of here. The thing's got an 87 kilowatt hour battery pack.
That's a weird, let's talk about that for a second. That number, what's up with that? That's because you turned it on, it was like 99% full or something, and it showed 238 miles, I think, of range.
Right, which seems reasonable.
That sounds like the actual range you're going to get, not 100.
I think that they just totally messed up the car to optimize it for the EPA testing. So like maybe it'll be like a Taycan situation where it'll do 100 miles more than what claimed. I don't really care about the range. You know me, like that's dumb. But like just, okay, you can engineer around the EPA test to get a good number. Obviously, they didn't even think about that till the cars were almost to, you know, start of production, or at least here in the US. So I thought that was disappointing. They claim 400 horsepower.
Right.
There's no chance in hell that thing has 400 horsepower. Right. I mean, an ID4 all-wheel drive will wipe the floor of this thing. So I just, that really annoyed me more than anything, because I'm like, look, like we put in the video, like we got it up to about 100 miles an hour, wide open throttle with David driving. And I'm like, dude, like that's not fast.
Right. And you do have a Model S Plaid. So, well, I've driven
driven cars with the same claimed output. I've spent a lot of time in Polestar 2. I've spent a lot of time in XC40 Recharge, which are claimed to have 400 horsepower, 300 kilowatt output, same as this. And those rip. They get out of, they freaking spin the tires. They're awesome. They're fast. This was not. Let's ignore the fact that they're lying to you about the performance figures. Then you get into ride handling, noise, and, you know, as soon as we get on the road, we're in a series production model. We were one of the US ones. Right. You know, it just started creaking and rattling as soon as we got out on the road. And, you know, it's all in the video. I didn't hold back in the video. You guys know me. I just share my experience.
The guy sitting right there beside you, he's driving. He's like, you know, just doing his job. He's just driving the car.
He's a rep. He works for a lot. He's not necessarily, David wasn't like a VinFast guy. He was just our driver. And, you know, I was like, you know, let's try things. Every time he turned the steering wheel, it would creak and rattle up front. You know, the whole back of the car was rattling on the highway. It was definitely loud, way louder than any other series production car I've been in. And like, maybe we got a bad one, right? So then the next day we got into a different one.
Okay.
And we heard a lot of the same noises, same power, weird thing. Wouldn't give us the juice. But like, that's the bad, right? The materials weren't great in the car. Right. I'm evaluating it in the context that this is $20,000 more than an ID4. It's $10,000 more than an Ioniq 5 or EV6. And it's way more than a Fisker Ocean. And and a Mustang Mach-E, it's 20 grand more roughly. So why would you ever go here? Then you're buying a car that has no service network in place. You know, they're going to have third-party services here. Like, that does not exist in America. There are some European automakers, like the Chinese folks that come over. I'm thinking of SUV. What was it?
XPeng?
No. It's like Neo. A little one. The small Chinese automakers that go to Europe, they use like their version of Midas to service the cars. So they have, I don't think VinFast told us who they're going to have done, but it's certainly not going to be them working on it. And, you know, what's really interesting is since I posted this video, so many people from Vietnam who own VinFast have actually chimed in. They've either chimed in with like, they're going to try and put you in jail, but I'm like, this is America. And they've also tried, because in Vietnam, I guess you can't talk bad about this thing. And then they've also said that a lot of them are VinFast owners. If you read down, they break down. No one said anything. I haven't seen one good comment from one VinFast owner that's enjoyed their car.
Okay.
So look, there's doing a lot of things right. That's the negative. Right. What's good? The good is they have over-the-air software update capable. They okay. have software that definitely needs the over-the-air software updates. They have...
As you can see, looking at this UI, it's kind of clunky.
God, it's so ugly.
Telling us the positives now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, there are some positives. Yeah. Like,
It's a car.
Route planning.
It definitely drives. It has route planning. It, overall, I thought had pretty good suspension actually. Felt nice from the passenger seat on the road. Like I was like, okay, but that's actually not hard to do when you put a giant battery in the bottom of your car. That just naturally right. enhances its ability to handle well. And I think they look great. I think the styling, the door thunk, like the VF9, their big SUV, awesome looking vehicle. And so look, I think there's a lot of work to do. I just wonder if it's going to be like a chart, like Tom's Charger situation. They are obviously rushing to market. That's the thing. VinFast, it's in the name. They do everything fast. Right. That doesn't mean they do everything well. I wonder if they're going to say, that's the first batch. Wow, we really screwed up. Sorry to the first owners who supported us, our pioneers or whatever they are. And then they'll actually engineer a good car next. I don't know.
Right. It looks like they have a lot of learning to do yet. You know, this is like a pretty much a brand new company. And the CEO doesn't have a huge automotive background, you know.
And they just obviously don't understand our market. They don't understand how to work with the media properly. They really don't understand how we want to buy our cars. No one there knew how much this car was going to cost. Right. I went in thinking we're doing this $40,000 situation with a battery subscription, right? This is we have series production cars in the U.S. They're required to have a price on them. And so then they're like, oh, we're actually not doing a battery subscription because no bank would finance it. That's what they told me. And I'm like, I know, I told you that a year ago when I met with you guys. That doesn't work for our market.
Right. I think told them similar things to everybody else. They're very frank with this, asking for criticism and suggestions. And we told them, the subscription's not going to fly in America, you know?
Well, they haven't, I don't think, publicly said anything about it, but it's not happening based off of everyone I spoke to there.
Right.
But then some people were like, oh, the car's 50 grand. Then people were like, oh, it's 55 starting. And then the one we were in, the guy was like, oh, we're in 58. But then Drew was in an identical car next to us, and they told him it was 62. So we have no idea how much this thing costs, except it's way too expensive.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know if they're going to have to take it a huge bath on this first bunch of vehicles and get the quality. They need to go through your video. And I don't know.
I really think I just want to buy one, actually.
Yeah.
And really... go deep into how many little things they're just skipping.
Right.
Because it's an insane number that we could never even comment on a podcast. And when you park it next to a German automaker who spent, 7 years designing MEB, even though that's not that great of a package anymore, that's old tech. Really the pinnacle of tech right now is Ioniq 5 EV6. That's that's what we really should be comparing this to. It's so far behind. I mean, 31 minutes, 10 to 70% is terrible.
Not quite there.
You're going to launch a product. What are you doing better than someone else? Well, you cost more and you have terrible NVH and you have terrible materials in the car. And it looks nice. Okay. And then you're driving a Vietnamese car around. People don't work really hard, buy a $60,000 car just to say they drive a crap box.
Sure. And right. It's a new company and man, they're going to make a lot of missteps. They're going to make a lot more and I don't even know what they're going to do. They're going to lose a lot of money for a while, for sure. And see if they have
you would going fast with any automaker.
Right. But this was not even a new company. It's from a country that hasn't have a lot of automotive experience. You know, the people they have hired a lot of people, from companies with lots of experience and stuff, but just getting all the gel and getting all the communications, I think they're going to need to make some big changes. I think to make if they're going to make this fly, because they don't want to, who wants to lose billions of dollars,
here's the thing that really annoyed me. We're on this test drive loop, right? They're only letting you drive it up to about 20 miles an hour, and then you got to hit the brakes, and then you're just like maneuvering. It's like you're stuck in a parking lot traffic, which no one likes driving through parking lots, by the way. So right. We're like driving in this parking lot. And then they're like, oh, why don't you stop and get a cookie here? I'm like, no, I don't want to. I want to hear all about how the car's engineered and where what's going on with the motors. And this is a tech show. This isn't like have random people come and drive your VinFast. Like, this is industry show. They really don't get it. I'm sorry.
Right? No,
this is crazy.
Well, we're going to move on, but we're going to move on just to Livin and Patrick talking about the same thing, because they also drove the VinFast VF8 on the little track, I believe they had. And so you've heard Kyle, you know, it's pretty harsh. So your perspective might be a little different. What did you think about the VinFast VF8?
Well, we echo a lot of Kyle's comments. Like, people didn't know a lot of details. One of the things that we were struggling is, like, I wanted to, you know, find out, is that car a production car, or is it still a pre-production? They didn't know. They didn't know the exact specs. And we're like, we're getting in the car, and you don't know battery size, or, you know, like basic stuff that you should know. And that little course, as Kyle mentioned, it was tiny. Right. So the only thing you could really test, you couldn't even really test the acceleration. I mean, it's like got up to like 20, 22 miles an hour and slammed on the brakes. Brakes work. That's a good thing.
Right. and at low speed, you can't hear all the wind noise or the creaks and the noise so much, yeah. Right?
They did have like a little rumble thing as you're going around a corner to sort of show off the suspension, but you're going so slow, it wasn't that big of a deal. I did note, like, the steering was super, super light feeling.
Okay.
Almost like disturbingly so, but I mean, you know, maneuvering around in a parking lot, it was great for that because it made it easy. But yeah, the same type of things. We didn't do too much with the software except tried the voice commands and could not get it to understand anything.
Yeah.
Oh, can I say something about the voice commands really quick?
Yeah.
Sorry. You can't turn them off. There's no way to disable voice commands. Ooh, huh. That could be software updated, but it was driving all the drivers nuts that we talked to.
Was it in English?
It's in English, and you can basically do Alexa or the built-in one. Sorry if I just made everyone's speaker go.
Sorry.
I didn't realize. But doesn't you can't shut it off. It's crazy.
And we actually tried the voice commands in the one at VinFast, but another company, What Three Words, is integrated into VinFast. So we went to their booth and got to try it there, and we ran into the same thing.
I mean, to be fair, everyone trying it had accents, but I do think that the software should be capable of that. So
sure.
That's probably a generic issue.
But yeah, I love the styling. We were sort of interested in.
I don't personally, actually, the
VF6.
I like the 6 and the 5.
It's VF8. It's not my. I don't. You guys like the styling. I'm not a big fan of the VF8 myself. I like the other ones more. This one's kind of. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's still concerning because I think the VF6, they had the WLTP estimated range at 248, which then you're like, ooh, for, you know, like. We need to see the pricing on this. But we also had the same issues of, like, nobody knew the pricing. And then it's like, well, the leasing, I think, has gone away. But yeah.
I do wonder, as you guys are saying, because while we basically did a booth tour, and at one point someone came up to us and asked us opinions on the 4 e-bikes that they had there. And they were very adamant that they're going to take our input and change things and pick what they're going to work on. So right. Yeah, maybe this is like, let's see what happens. Do people like this? You know, who breaks down?
Yeah, it was actually funny because we were literally filming and they're like, hi, can I ask you some questions? And I was like, we're busy here.
here's the bicycles. These are new. Actually, I like that.
Because they were like, sure, because we actually need more information. Like, do you have pricing? When are they coming to the US? And it's like, actually, they're all prototypes.
Right.
We may bring none, or we may bring all, or they may be completely different bikes. What color do you like?
Yeah. Did they have their scooters there? They make scooters as well.
No scooters, just these four or five models, I think. Mm-hmm. We were sort of excited by the e-bikes because we're our new house. We have like a great bike trail and whatnot. But
nice.
It was sort of like, okay, well. I thought it was great that they're trying to get input versus let's just throw a bike out there and people will buy it.
Right. You know? Right. Sure. We'll see how they execute on that sales strategy though. So pulling up the screen now, I'm showing you at their booth, they had the VF6 and 7 there on display as well. So they're going to have, these ones aren't coming out until, I'm not sure when they're coming out, next year, maybe sometime. It's still sometime in the future anyway. So that hopefully they can work out some of these hardware issues and different things. But this is the styling of these ones looks pretty great. And this is like going to be more affordable. Oh, man.
And they did bring up the fact multiple times, because we're here in San Diego, that they have stores actually open. And we saw one, but it was closed when we went by. But I think we're going to do a video or at least visit, because I want to see, like, how are they selling these?
Yeah, what is our experience like?
Yeah, because sometimes you go to these shows and you're like, okay, I understand. Like, this is, you know, like the Ram truck. You're like, okay, you don't have all the information because it's a ways away. But how do you open a store and multiple stores and not have all the answers?
Right. Yeah. And I believe they're all in California now, too. So you should be able to find one relatively close, right?
Yep.
So while this was there at the CES, they released some of the specs and figures for the VF6 and 7, which is all kind of new. And if I can pull that up real quick, bear with me, guys. Talk amongst yourselves. All right, and scroll down here to this. This is the important part, I guess. So you can see all. Yes, and so we have the post up on Inside EVs too with all these numbers from the show, and they tell a bit of an interesting story. The two models come in either Eco or Plus trims. VF6 is front wheel drive like the Eco. The VF6 Plus is front wheel drive like the Eco. So each one comes in a Eco and Plus version. And the VF7, the bigger one, gets all-wheel drive in the Plus version, bigger wheels, and even like a bigger infotainment screen or something. Liv, do you think they might have missed the trick starting out with the VF8? Because these look arguably better, and it doesn't seem like the strategy of starting with their top-end stuff is going to play out really well. Like, everything is priced too high, you know, for what we're getting compared to the competition. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I missed what you said in the first part, so no.
So they started with the VF6, 7.
Oh, no, because I think, like, you and I are probably the outliers in liking the smaller ones, and people want this more bang for their buck, bigger, I guess.
Right, right.
No, I think it plays with the market. I mean, I personally want the 5 and 6 aesthetically.
Right. I think the 6 and 7, the 5, they do make a VF5, but that's only in Vietnam. I just saw it on their website. And actually in Vietnam, it's kind of interesting. They sell it. It's around, works at about $20,000 or $22,000 over there. And like the US equivalents of what they're charging for that small car, which is kind of like the price point I think they should have started with here.
Need to charge for their VF8.
Yeah. I mean,
Yes. But
definitely, yeah. I mean, they're going to take a bath regardless. So they should put it in what its actual value is, you know? So that's closer to 30 than 60. But, you know, in the long run, I don't know exactly what they have to do to get this figured out. But we can move on from that, from VinFast. We've talked about them enough, I think. I don't know. You also got to check out the solar, Lightyear Zero was on display there at the stand at CES.
Yeah, I mean, they had the Lightyear Zero, and they announced the wait list is opening up for the Lightyear 2. And that's what I was going to talk about earlier, is like they did one of the coolest, like, we have the car, but we're not ready to reveal it. And rather than just put like a sheet over it, they put it in a room, and they had like peepholes basically all the way down, so you could sort of peek through and see just parts of the car.
It frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but it was like sort of the coolest way of taking a sneak peek at a vehicle that they don't want you to see quite yet. And this is Jasper that we talked to. He's one of their engineers, but he hadn't even seen the Lightyear 2 until they rolled it in and put it in the room. So,
right.
But yeah,
it's a design concept then.
Yeah, basically. But the Lightyear 2 is the one that they're targeting for under 40,000,
right.
You know, no specs or anything like that yet. The Lightyear 0 seems just really cool for what it is. It's like, you know, solar panels on the roof, on the hood, on the rear. You can't see out the rear. It's just they have a camera back there. So you have a screen.
Okay, it's opaque.
Right. But they are, you know, talking about over 600 miles of range. Most aero production car at 0.175 CD. What else?
And the solar could gain like 49 miles a day.
Yeah.
I do personally think that would be really disconcerting, not be able to see you back or relying on digital. That would make it comfortable.
I think it's something you might get used to. I don't know.
We've been in some cars that have that. And I, you know, it's, you sort of have to get used to it.
Right.
It's not horrible. I still prefer a mirror. And it's because of changing focal lengths and science. Right. Some people compare this because Aptera is sort of trying to do a little bit of the same thing, but it's in a vastly different package, three wheel odd design. I think this might be more acceptable for people that want. Because we love the Aptera.
I have a reservation.
It's great down by there by you guys too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Aptera reviews coming up.
Yeah, I can't imagine parallel parking like an Aptera in like downtown LA. But like this, like I don't think it would attract too much attention.
Okay,
but they don't even have one production car yet, and they're already announcing their second one.
Well, yeah. No, they've entered production now, I believe.
Sold any? Do people own them?
No.
I don't know if they're delivered yet, but they're building them, basically. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
We made a video with one, and I didn't drive it, but based off what I saw, it was really like very early days, and the solar panels weren't nearly as much as they were expecting to get out of them.
Right. It's new company teething pains, I think, right, you know?
But let's unveil a second one already.
Yeah, I mean, well, Fisker's done that. No one's received their Fisker Ocean yet, and they've already announced and shown their next thing.
I mean, whether it's CES or whatever, these auto shows or whatever, it gets to be frustrating when it's like, we're going to unveil something and it'll be out, or we're going to start taking orders in 3 years and start delivering in 4 years. And I'm like, well, you know, there's some people that could start a company and design from scratch and get it out in that time, and you're gonna, you know what I mean?
I do have to answer Mike about the Aptera being ugly since you highlighted it. I'm just psyched to see this tech out there. Like, I don't know if Lightyear is gonna go anywhere. Aptera is nuts. The car looks crazy.
Yeah.
It looks crazy. I don't know how that's gonna drive. Are you gonna curb it? But I'm really curious, right? And we want this stuff, we want weird stuff because maybe that'll trickle down to useful stuff in more manageable vehicles. So I'm excited. I think the Lightyear 2, maybe they just like had, like, why even call it a 0 and a 2? It's just like a, you know, playing around and then the 2 kind of thing. But we want these people to succeed. We want all this tech to succeed. So it's like, sure. Yeah. Try. Get 49 miles of solar. Yeah. Try. That's awesome.
Well, Larry commented that for some reason, Aptera will not release their government crash test data. They probably haven't done it. I don't think they're required to because it's a three-wheel vehicle. It's classified as like in the motorcycle class.
So we went to the Aptera Gamma release back in September, and they did. I thought they said that they would release it, and they were very clear that they're not required to release it because they're not required to test it, but they would release it.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure they were going to do it anyway, just to, you know, internally.
Yeah, they need to do crash testing.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, a lot of people expect that every time a new car comes out that you're going to see government crash test data. That's not the case. Not all cars get government crash tested. I know most people just assume that. It depends on the volume. And some cars get crash tested like 2 years after they were introduced. So it's not like, I think a lot of people are under the assumption that a car doesn't get released to the public until it has its government crash testing data, at least in the US. Could be different in Europe, I'm not sure. But in here, there's a lot of cars that hit the market that have not had published crash tested. And those are cars with four wheels. This isn't even required to, because it's a motorcycle class.
Right. I think they're going to, because people want to see, you know, it's such a radically different vehicle and different construction. It's like a composite construction. People are going to see how that works, because they're putting their lives in their hands, you know, getting into this vehicle. And it's just so radically different. But looking at time, we should move on to some news from the day. And there's some big news happened late yesterday. I believe it was late yesterday. That's when I found out about it. Anyway, so Tesla cut some prices yesterday. The Model 3 became $3,000 cheaper, I believe, and that you can now pick up a rear-wheel drive small battery that's 272 miles EPA Model 3 for $43,990, which that would be, and that was eligible for the IRA tax rebate incentive. So that would be $36,490 after the rebate, which is getting into, it's not too bad, but that's not, it's like the, you know, 272-mile battery. But that's still a pretty great deal.
Great deal. And you can full charge it every day because it's LFP.
Right, that's the LFP pack.
You get all of it. That's the move. Buy that.
Yeah. Or the Model Y long range is now $52,990 or $45,490 after the tax rebate. So I kind of think that's the move, really. It went down. They chopped 3,000 off the Model 3, but they chopped 13,000 off the Model Y. That's a crazy amount of number to make it qualify for this, you know, IRA incentive. I don't even know. I don't have a whole lot of notes of what to ask y'all about. What do y'all think about this?
Everyone's ordering them. My mom called me last night. She's like, I just got one. Going for it. So she's trading in her Genesis GV60 on a Model Y. So, and everyone's going for them.
Okay. Well, Pat and Liv, you guys said you were thinking about buying a Model 3. Is this now in a price range where you might be Tesla owners?
No, we were sort of talking about it last night briefly,
right?
Thinking about all the other implications. We don't necessarily we don't want a sedan. So right. We still would be like a Bolt compared to like a Model Y. But the price drop is, it makes it hard. And, you know, and of course, the Mach-E forum, like everybody was jumping on it immediately. It's for some people, you know, when you're looking at it and you're thinking, you know, choice A or choice B, and then choice B gets dropped $13,000. And considering right now, and I think it's all going to change with the IRS tax credit thing, but like the Mach-E not qualifying for the tax credit because it's like 56. Or actually higher, and then the Model Y gets under that. So then not only is it cheaper, but then it gets $7,500. Like as of today, it's like that's a hard decision and hard to justify if you're worried about budget, and who isn't?
I mean, but because we're worried about budget, I'm still down with the Bolt because it's still the most affordable. We don't need another road tripper. We have a Mach-E. Right. If you're looking for your single EV, your road tripper, something that's going to be your everything, then yeah, of course, absolutely. But in our case, it's just needing like a city vehicle. I still don't feel pushed because budget is of the highest concern. So yeah, it's cheaper now, but it's still not like the cheapest. Make everything more affordable. Why not? More people in EVs.
Fair though, I don't think the Model Y and the Bolt are real direct competitors. I think it's a much more competitor to Mach-E. You know, ID4, Pro S, you know, the Ioniq 5s, those. E6. And now when you lop 13,000 off of a Model Y, it makes it a hard decision not to go in that direction. It really does. I mean, that's crazy. How pissed would you be if you just took delivery of a Model Y?
And then it's
13,000
less.
Well, it's 20,000 less if you take the tax credit too.
Yeah. I'll be making, so my payments for the next 2 years are just going to get me to where I would have been if I bought one now, you know? That happens. Prices go up and down in the market. You know, people don't complain when they buy it on the cheap like now. So you're going to get it the other way too, but this makes it a stupid, easy deal, in my opinion. I mean, and I love the other EVs out there. Like I've talked, I rave about Ioniq 5. I love Mach-E, you know, but 13 grand off a Model Y now, having it qualify for everything, getting the supercharger network for those road trips, which we know makes a difference. It's tough not to go in that direction. It really is. If you have the 55,000 or so, whatever, if you're in that price range, but you know, we're talking Bolt here, that's 50% of what you're talking about. You know, we're Bolt, we're talking, you know, 26 to 30 full MSRP after incentives, you know, low 20s. So,
yeah,
it's not, you can't compare.
No, this is a good pitch. Like, you probably convince some people here too.
Well, no, it's crazy. I mean, it's an awesome deal. It really is.
Alahum mentions in the comments here, I think it's the correct price. The previous was way overpriced. And I think he has a point. So they've raised the price of the Model Y over probably $10,000 over the last couple of years, right? So this is just coming back to reality, maybe, you know, a good reality, and just and tweaked enough to get under the wire for the $55,000 tax credit ceiling. But yeah, so this does a few different things. So well, this puts all the competition on their heels, basically. I'm not sure what's going on in like Hyundai headquarters right now, but I imagine there's like some strategized or Ford or Chevrolet. Well, I mean, Chevrolet, I think it's got the good pricing for the Equinox and Blazer. So they might not be too impacted, but and those cars aren't out yet. So they have lots of time to maneuver, but the companies with cars out, man, I mean, so there's that angle. And there's also, so does this say something about demand for Tesla products? You know, has it actually softened? I mean, if it had softened, it's firming up now for a while, but at least the next couple of months, because this is like for the next 2 months, it's going to be eligible for the $7,500. And then after March, it's only half of that, right? Or maybe even, yeah, the vehicle is going to be, yeah, because it's the LFP pack. I don't even have to make them in the US.
I did check out, somebody posted on Twitter last night showing the like current in stock 3 and Y inventory, and it was climbing. And then in December, when they were doing the $7,500 discount plus some free supercharging, it just completely wiped out the inventory. Right. Then when that ended in January, all of a sudden you see the inventory skyrocketed again. And of course this will clear it out. Like I'm sure it was cleared out last night by midnight, but it still doesn't seem like a significant number, because I think there were like 2,000 in current inventory nationwide. And if you think about, you know, Ford, Chevy, VW, like how many cars they have in sitting on dealer lots across the US. So I'm like, I don't know if the numbers are that big, that it's any indication that there's softening demand. I know that, you know, Tesla's just ramping up more and more, and this is just going to drive it. I am curious, because like when they did all of those price increases, it was said we're only doing these price increases because materials, supplies, you know, everything has gotten more expensive.
Right.
Things didn't get cheap overnight. So like,
no, they did not.
What prompted this?
Yeah. I mean, that's what, yeah, we're learning now. We can't really believe everything that every car manufacturer says, you know, at face value.
When you raise prices, you have to give an excuse. And it was it was a great time for the last couple of years for people to just say, supply chain. Oh, what's wrong? Supply chain. Why are we raising? Supply chain. Why can't I deliver these cars? Supply chain. You know,
no chips.
There were a lot of problems with the supply chain, and it did drive prices up, but everything got lumped onto that. It was like, you know, you know, a very easy excuse. So,
and speaking about demand softening, Greg Kramer points out demand has softened a lot, not just for Tesla. And that's true, because, you know, interest rates are going up. The Fed is raising interest rates, and that slows down the economy. It slows down buying for like large ticket things, especially. It's not affecting the economy quite as much as like a lot of people have predicted. But like CEOs of certain car companies have predicted like certain doom, I think, because of the raising of the rate, but I don't think we're there yet. Unless, of course, you know, Tesla's going in red to sell the cut 13,000 off of this, and it's going to be losing money on all these cars that they're selling, which is not a great, you know, business model, I guess.
And unless you figure a certain portion of them will buy FSD beta. or FSD, right? And that'll offset the cost. There must be some of those conversations going on.
Sure. Yeah.
They have huge margins to begin with. So, you know, right. It's like they can have a big price increase and still have bigger margins than their competitors are having. So.
Yeah, I think they'll be all right.
Either way, it's now the buy. Like if you're looking at ID4, if you're looking at Mach-E, if you're looking at Ioniq 5, EV6, Model Y, there are things that those cars do better than Model Y, and many of them. But what Model Y gives you is the freedom to go anywhere with zero or close to zero hassle. You can have a CHAdeMO adapter, a CCS adapter, and access to the supercharger network. You can literally drive anywhere you want. And they, I don't know if you can put a price tag on that.
Right. I think they might have to look at chopping prices too. I don't know. I think they may be forced to if people stop buying their cars. I mean,
we're going to see automakers do everything they can to get into the tax credit situation.
Right. This is going to be crazy because the last few years were crazy with the prices going up and being difficult to get stuff. Now things are getting crazier with this whole, you know, tax incentive, all the rules, companies trying to, you know, get their vehicles to qualify. It's an interesting time. It's kind of exciting in a way. It's kind of like, I don't know what's going to happen next. I have no idea.
It's going to be interesting too, like the ripple effects, because, you know, everybody just, you know, that was thinking about buying a car, probably just went and did their order last night. But what about the used car market? Brandon Flash, who you guys probably know as well, has been tracking like used Tesla prices and noting how they're been creeping lower and lower. Mm-hmm. On the Mach-E forum, people are noticing like they sold their car last month or 2 months ago, and it's now being listed for $5,000 less than they sold it for. Right. So there's like everywhere across the board, the used car market is softening, and you know, how is that going to play out? And especially like when, you know, you got somebody that's like, I can't afford an electric. And then now these used electrics hopefully will be dropping in price quite a bit over the next month or so. Could be interesting. You know, like, again, just ripple effects.
Maybe you should hold off buying that Bolt. Maybe there's like a used, I mean, oh my, I mean, God. I'm not holding off. But
just buy.
Yeah. No, it as soon as I heard the news last night, it was sort of like I wanted to call the dealer up and go like, yeah, why should I buy this when a Model 3?
Well, sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a legit, what do you call, haggling strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll still put their PPF on or their ceramic or whatever it is on it and nitrogen, no matter what.
Tires. So the atmosphere is what, 80% nitrogen already? Is that what it is?
Yeah, close to 80% nitrogen. All of their stuff is just whatever.
I do think it's exciting, though. Someone commented, like, why would you buy the Niro EV now? You're right. And the price of that needed to come down always. So I think this could have a good ripple effect. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. And we got to remember, like, all of the manufacturers before Tesla, before EVs, they know what price wars look like. They know what 0% financing for 60 months looks like. You know, there's ways that people will figure out. But we also know, you know, bankruptcy has loomed large for a few of these companies as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Man, this is going to be interesting to see where time is. Yeah. I don't know. Tom, do you have any more thoughts about this?
No, that's it. It's an awesome deal on the Model Y now. You're going to see crazy, this quarter is going to have some awesome numbers for Tesla. They're going to clear out everything. I mean, I've seen so many people posting, just ordered my Tesla, canceled my Ioniq 5 reservation, you know, and so this is great news. It's great news for the industry. It puts pressure on the other manufacturers. Like, it puts pressure on Ford to maybe, you know, push down the Mach-E price a little bit, get it to qualify for whatever incentives it can. And, you know, it's good for the consumer. You know, Tesla has the stick. They are the it company with electric vehicles. They can put the pressure on all of the other brands like no other electric vehicle company can. If Ford lowered the price of the Mach-E, I don't necessarily think Hyundai and Volkswagen would go out and say, oh my God, we got to react to this. But this, you know, a $13,000 drop by Model Y, all of the companies right now are sitting in meetings saying, okay, how do we do? How do we not have our sales tanked this quarter. What do we do? So, you know, it's good.
And Tesla has like the manufacturing capacities like to make a big, huge difference. They have more, they build more electric cars than anybody else, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, some of these other OEMs build a lot more cars, but not electric ones.
Yeah.
And so if you're like building like 75% of the cars, you kind of have a big stick, like you say, in the market. Yeah.
And this price cut proves that Tesla knows they can produce the vehicles. Like if they were supply constrained, there'd be no reason to lower the price. Like if they were selling them as fast as they can make them, they know they have the capacity now to just crank out Y. So let's do it. Let's show the market what we can do this quarter. Let's lop off 13 grand and just keep making these cars and putting them out there. So, you know, it's good. Your competition's good, and it's good when you shake things up. You know, you guys know I owned a restaurant for years. When I drove past the pizzeria that was a mile down the block and it said, you know, weekday special, $4.99 for a large pie, you know, I had to go back and sit in my office and say, okay, how am I going to deal with this? You know, what should I do? And that's what all the companies are doing now. Business is business, whether you're selling pizza or electric cars. You have to react to what your competition does, and it makes you, you know, it makes you a better company, because then you think about how can I produce better? How can I service my customers better? And it's good. It shakes things up.
Right on. Okay, so I guess there's probably a lot more that's going to happen in this with this situation over the next couple months, and we'll keep an eye on it. But in the meantime, I wanted to show you all this little thing if I can bring it up, because this is like the coolest thing from CES. And maybe you saw something at CES that is cooler, Kyle and Pat, Patrick and Liv. But hey, Patrick, I keep calling you Pat. Is that okay? Mm. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I go with anything pretty much.
Okay. Okay. So did either of you guys see this at CES?
We heard them talk about it, but it's not anything anyone can buy.
Right. Yeah. No, it's nothing you can buy, but
yeah.
So I don't think this will ever be a thing. Maybe we see on production cars or no time soon, but I thought it was pretty neat. So basically Hyundai Mobis, which is a division of the automaker, came up with these wheel modules that have everything a car needs to go, except like the energy, the battery. So there's a motor, there's brakes, some suspension, there's some steering mechanisms in there. So the result is a car that can move in many different ways. And I think it's just like awesome. I don't know, like pivot turn, like Tom, is this the future? You're on mute. Sorry.
I can see cars doing this when they're completely autonomous. I don't think humans can deal with that. I could see people just hitting so many cars in parking lots, somebody turning the wheel the whole way, and then the car just swings wildly and whacks into another car. Like, yes. I think this is too complex for many human brains. So I think when the cars can park themselves completely dumb, yes, they'll pull up right to a spot where there's like the sensors will tell there's like a half an inch clearance on each side. The wheels will turn sideways and it'll just perfectly fit in. But no, I don't see that happening with humans.
I'm so glad you said that, Tom, because that was the first thing I thought too. Like, well, this is very unexpected. Like, we know what cars do, forward, back, how they turn, everything. But if someone near you can just suddenly spin,
it's like the EQS with the 10 degree of rear turning is like magic. I love it, but at the same time, it's like trying to parallel park with that thing. It's like my mind melts.
What
do I even do with it? But it's, you know, autonomous driving. I didn't think about that would be perfect
when the car can do it themselves. And just like Patrick, I'm glad you brought up that point, rear wheel steering is freaking awesome. You know, when I had the Hummer EV up at my house for a while and to drive, and one of the things, my house, I have like a circle, like a landing where my garage is, and right now I have a Rivian R1T and a Lightning. They're my two daily drivers. It's like making that turn is like a 6-point K turn, you know, to turn around, because I'm not used to having such big vehicles. When I had the Hummer, it was like one turn and boom, it made it, just because those rear wheels can turn. And I'm like, God, I wish these trucks had it. So I'm all in on the rear steering, but this is like, now this is what, you know, maybe Kyle can get his brain is wired to be able to deal with those wheels like that, because he's so used to making cars perform crazy tricks. But I think the average person will end up killing people in parking lots if they were able to turn the wheels like that.
Right. I think you'd have to be, it'd be governed by sensors, you know, so the car would have to not allow you to.
It's just not going to be a thing.
Right. Plus, it's probably very expensive to put all this stuff into the, you know.
It's a great showcase.
Yeah. It's interesting. Michelin actually had something like this maybe like 7-8 years ago. I don't know if you remember those Michelin wheels with the suspension and the motor inside them.
I just worry about the weight. You have a lot of unsprung mass when you put everything inside your wheel.
Right.
There was an actual production car that did this back in like the 50s.
Oh, yeah. It dropped down from the
there
rear.
There was a fifth wheel in the trunk. Right. And it dropped down and lifted the car up and turned.
I wish I had more time to think about it. I would have brought that up. All right. So what's our time? We're getting down to it. So I just wanted a couple of other news things that we wanted to touch on really quickly. I keep hitting the wrong buttons here. So we showed
you're mumbling,
this,
Dom.
Right, thank you. Don't mumble, Dominic.
God.
Right. So the Buick Electra 4. We talked about this a few weeks ago, I think, and it leaked actually in China now, so we can see what it actually looks like. And I mean, there's not a whole lot of talk about this because we don't know for sure that it's coming here, and if it does, we don't know if it's going to look like this. You know, probably, but I don't know. What do y'all think, real quick? Live in Pat.
I like it. I'm partial to the inflated bottom kind of vehicles like the Fisker and
the inflated what?
Inflated bottom.
Yeah, that's what, you know, it's like the smaller windows versus the chunky bottom.
Oh, okay. Like a high, what do you call it? High belt line. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it looks good. And I mean, it seems like they're not going to bring it to the US, which is unfortunate. Really? But I think it looks pretty good. And way better than most Buicks I've seen lately.
Yeah, Buick Encore. Buick's never been my brand stylistically, but yeah. I think Buicks, you know, didn't get cut like Oldsmobile and Pontiac did because it was such a big, you know, seller in China. So this is, you know, Buick, you know, selling a car for China. And I don't know. It'll be interesting if it comes here, but it's not as edgy as the Blazer, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it'll work for them. Maybe there's a good demographic for this car here. I don't know, but let's move on real quick. I wanted to mention too that we learned this week the Ram Revolution, which we talked about last week, but actually I'll mention this real quick. So it's going to get a range extender option that was confirmed this week, and no details on it, but we'll have an all electric battery version and then a one with a range extender. Range extender. I don't know, Tom, do you think that's a smart move for Ram?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not something that I probably would go for, but as an option, I think it makes sense for a lot of buyers. And, you know, I think some of the biggest complaints you'll see now about the Lightning, for instance, I think most people love a lot about the Lightning, but what they complain about is it's towing or, you know, in really rural areas, super long distances where there isn't charging infrastructure. That, you know, that this would eliminate that. I mean, you could use it to tow whatever you wanted to, albeit, you know, a good portion of it might be on gas. So I think it's a smart move, especially for pickup trucks. I don't know how much I support it for production cars, but for pickup trucks, I think it, you know, I think it makes sense. You know, don't forget Ford patented their own version of this, but it was a removable range extender. And we haven't really seen that yet, but I think you're going to see that at some point where Ford's going to say, okay, now it's an option. You know, 2024 option is this, and it's a drop-in range extender. It looks like a toolbox that goes in the back of the Lightning, you know, where the big toolboxes would be right behind the rear window in a pickup truck. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Ford's been working on that, and, you know, it seems like Dodge is going to come out of the box with it as an option. Yeah, I think it's a good move.
Kyle, do you have a quick thought on the range extender? Does that fix the pickup truck for people who live in Colorado?
Yep.
But it makes it more expensive and more, you know, yep. More
price stuff. Is not the issue for so many people.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all about what can this thing do? Right. And honestly, as someone who tows a lot with an electric truck, at least 3 days a week, something like that, It's really freaking annoying. And it's not the range. The range is fine. It's the that you can't charge the damn thing without unhooking a trailer half the time. I mean, we have some videos showing road trips with the Rivian where I'm like, I'm leaving this thing hooked up. We are not taking this trailer off. And we piss off the entire Walmart that we're parked at. And it's like, you know, just not cool. So until we get better charging stations adapted for towing, then I am all about the range extender lifestyle. I think it's perfect for van life. I really hope they do like this drivetrain in one of their vans, because I would love, you know, I have a diesel Sprinter that we go van lifing with. I would, and I hate the diesel part, but an electric van would not work for the way we use it. I mean, we just took that thing up to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. We, you know, we're going out into the middle of nowhere. That's why we have it. And, you know, no electric application would work for it yet.
Right.
And Dom, think about this. If you have the range extender, you can then get the truck with the smallest battery option, because you know, true, like let's say the Lightning, for instance, the small battery is 230 miles of range. Most people aren't going to even touch that on their daily driving, but they are what, when they're going long distances or when they're towing. And now you just use the range extender for those instances. And, you know, every day you charge it and you can live with a smaller battery. And it's a $10,000 option on a Lightning. Right. How much do you think the removable range extender would be? Probably not more than $10,000. So now you actually get a much more capable truck for about the same price as getting the bigger battery version of that same truck. So makes sense.
Right on. So we're right up against the time here, but actually Liv and Patrick, I wanted to ask you if you'd seen the Ram Revolution in Las Vegas while you were there and what your thoughts on it were. We talked about it a little last week, but it's.
Yeah, no, it looks fantastic. But again, it's like, I just want to see what's actually going to make it into production.
Yeah. I wanted to play with some of the features, like they're removable because it's supposed to have two screens. So the one's removable and then you can use it as a tablet. I'm like, how does this work? How does it integrate? Really flexible seating, and you can pull down the cab, the dash thing, or like, there's a lot that I really want to play with and try brake stuff. So it's all like, yeah, it looked really pretty, but I want to mess with it.
And they were non-committal on which features would actually translate over, obviously. But it's just frustrating when it's always like it's a prototype. And again, it feels like designers can design something great, but if it can't be put into production, then or if it's put into production and it costs $120,000, then I don't care.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, did you guys see the Ram Charger when you were there?
Yeah. It's weird. Like they had it on like a demo and it would basically just like drive under the truck.
It's like a Roomba.
Yeah. It basically looked like a charging Roomba. And we've talked to, there's some wireless companies that are doing charging where it's like embedded or you drive over something. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why they need to have like a little robot thing. I guess it's sort of like, if you can't park well, it can.
Think about this in your garage. You don't want to have to, if you want to have you buy a car with inductive charging capability, you don't want to have to dig a hole in your garage and bury the new, you know, charging plate, whatever. So this is like, just plug it in and it does all that stuff itself. You know, it comes, positions itself.
Well, some of them you can drive over it. So, I mean, there's disadvantages each way. Cause like this, it looked like it was a relatively big unit, and it's sort of like, for most of us, you know, if you have it in your garage, you got to have this giant, because it was pretty good sized Roomba, basically.
Right.
At the front of the garage, that's where you have like your tool bench or your washer and dryer or whatever, or the wall. So it's like, I just, unless it can maneuver around.
Right.
But I like the concept.
Right.
Because I never think of it as a big deal to just plug in. But for some people, I get it. It's like, that's one extra step.
Well, I'm on record as saying that I think inductive is a future thing. And in 10 years, we're going to see it everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think it's like sometime after 2030, once everything else kind of gets settled down, like battery tech and things, you know, I think we're going to start will be looking for competitive edges and, you know, not having to ever get it and plug your car in. It just, like, all that stuff just happens seamlessly. I mean, people will pay money for that, you know.
I won't, but. Because we've done like EV advocacy at events, and it is funny because I'm like, yeah, it's so simple. You just plug it in when you get home. I'm like,
right.
You got to plug it in every night. And I'm like, Yeah, it takes like 2 seconds, but it is a hurdle for some people.
Well, I do think the simpler we can make it, the better. Like we actually interviewed ABB about their home charger at CES, and like they're not even involving the user. Like they just want something simple so that you don't have to know about kilowatts or anything like that. You're just plugging in. So yeah, induction, you just drive over something. That's simple. Right now it's a little complex and it's a barrier for entry. Even plugging something in, because I know my mom would have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll have to. There's a lot of like people are saying in the comments that, let's see, Greg says inductive will always have less efficiency, but I don't know if inductive companies will tell you different things about that. But so we should do an episode about that sometime in the not too distant future. Maybe get somebody from, you know, a company that does the best ones that we can find anyway.
Well, we need the company that does the best ones, and then we want someone really against it so that we can come with a pretty average picture in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, because, right.
I can see it for public charging a lot more than for home charging, honestly. And even businesses, depots and things like that, where the employees just pull the truck into the lot and, you know, the thing lifts up from the ground and connects. But for home charging, it's very difficult for me to accept that added expense and loss of efficiency. And even if it's 1 or 2% less efficient, it's going to be less efficient. There's no way they're going to be completely on par with plugging in. And it's expensive, no matter how you look at it. Even driving down the cost in the future, it's still going to add, you know, cost to the car. Right now, it's thousands of dollars. Let's say they get it down to only $500. I can't imagine it getting less than that, because there's a lot that's involved in the inductive charging systems.
I think it could be really cool for like parking garages or something, especially like in a shopping mall where you don't, because I see some of those and I'm like, if I plug in there, I come back 2 hours later, am I going to be unplugged? And then for the owner, it's like, how many of those have we seen damaged, you know, and hopefully
and vandalized, you know, Patrick, people are going to start stealing cables for charging stations for the copper. So this would eliminate that. This would prevent that. So that's why more of a reason why I think public it's going to work. But I'm telling you, I don't, Dom, I'm against you on this for home charging. I see that maybe way out, nowhere near the 10-year time frame that you talked about. It'll be available in 10 years, but it will not be commonplace. Not for a long time.
There's a comment for someone in a wheelchair. It would be great. I agree with that. The more accessible.
Accessibility issues.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it will be available. That will be an option because all the automakers are working on it to some degree. I used a BMW wireless inductive charging system in 2014.
Right.
You know, so they had it up in Woodcliff Lake, New Jersey. They had it set up outside. And, you know, they had a system working then,
right?
You know, and they even said
with the i8,
they said the X5 plug-in hybrid was going to offer it as an option, like in 2016, it was supposed to be an option, and then it just never materialized.
Right.
And I remember the one thing that I had was, and I'm sure the systems have gotten more sophisticated now, you had to be perfect when you pulled in. And as I had to pull back out and pull in like 6 times to get it so I was better than 90% efficient. Like the first time I plugged in, it read on the screen, you're only getting like 35% of the energy. So I backed up, pulled in a little more to like 60%. Okay, back up, 80%. And, because the pad had to like match perfectly. And I'm sure they've improved these systems. But, and that might be why like the robot works, the thing that drives out, because it can have sensors to match it perfectly. But it's not just a matter of getting close, guys. For some reason, these systems, you had to be perfect the less perfect you are, the more waste you are. So if you park crooked, you might lose 30% of your electricity. So it's just, you know, it's definitely, you know, I'm not as high on inductive charging, I think, as some people.
Okay. Maybe I'm just high. Sorry, I'm not.
Welcome to the Inside EVs podcast.
All right, so that's just about everything, but I did want to mention one thing because I know Kyle's super interested about this. The 2023 Mazda MX-30 is back on sale again in the U.S., California, with the same 100-mile range and
that's
no
what
range
Liv
extender.
And Patrick should get. They're the in California.
Range extender. Yeah, you guys should get the MX-30 and prove everyone wrong.
We can't get it home from the dealer. It doesn't have the range.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but it charges really quickly, so you'll be okay.
In Europe, it's getting a rotary engine range extender, but for some reason, no one knows about that here yet, or maybe ever. Who knows? It's the weirdest situation. But anyway, I just thought I'd mention that.
It's got the Dorito in there. That's pretty cool.
It's got the what?
It's got the rotary looks like a Dorito chip.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. I know what you're talking about now.
It's got the rotary engine. That's kind of sweet. Right. Mazda, I love Mazda rotary stuff. I mean, their seals go up to 70,000 miles on like RX-8s and stuff, but they're cool.
Right. All right. So I think that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. And if you're watching us on YouTube, don't forget you can follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily when he's here. And when he's not here, he's still at EV News Daily on Twitter. And Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. I'm Dominic on Postdoc News at Dominic on Postdoc News and Mastodon. And Liv and Patrick, where can people find Mach-E Vlog? You can have Mach-E Vlog YouTube channel and also social media.
Yeah, both social media were at Mach-E Vlog, at Mach-E underscore vlog.
Okay, right on.
Don, before we cut out, I want to add one thing.
Sure.
So I talked about my charger giveaway last week and the week before. I gave away an Emporia 48 amp charger. Chris Lana was the winner. I'm starting a new charger giveaway this week. I'm going to just roll with this and just keep giving them away. A United Chargers Grizzle E Classic 40 amp charger. I'm going to have information on how to win that on my Twitter account this weekend. So if you want to try to win a charger, just check out my account this weekend. I'm going to post details.
Right on. So I think next week, we'll try to remember to mention this at the top of the show, Tom. So make sure lots of people get to hear about that and get a chance to enter and check out your Twitter feed. All right, so click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications, and thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Bye.
And we'll do a little...